Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I'm your host, author and journalist Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me. We're prepared to take a look at disgraced former American pornographic star Ron Jeremy. Before we get into it, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow me on social media, just search for the Deathcast. You can also go to tinyurl.com/dcastpatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to early ad-free shows, just as my first two subscribers, Chandler and Anthony, did. As did my largest subscribers monthly, Debbie, Samantha, Matt, and Becky. All right, now that all that's out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair. Kick back and relax. I've got my coffee. I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. Most people listening have no doubt heard of Ron Jeremy. He was the face of pornography, not just in America, but really worldwide for close to 50 years. Nicknamed the Hedgehog, he was short, pudgy, extremely unattractive, also described as a goofball, somebody that come into a room, you know, attention was drawn to him just by his presence, and he would invariably make people laugh by his antics. Jeremy was so well known that he really is the only porn star who had mainstream appeal in terms of crossover. I mean, there have been other people in the pornographic industry who were able to transition into being mainstream actors, most notably Tracy Lords. Jeremy, however, was on a completely different tier than anyone else within the industry. Books, documentaries, various products bearing his name and likeness, you name it, Ron Jeremy was able to capitalize on his celebrity status. What a lot of people didn't know, however, is that for decades, there were allegations swirling around the adult film industry that Jeremy was something of a predator, with accusations of rape and inappropriate touching being attributed to Jeremy, who, when these accusations would occasionally make headlines somewhere, would downplay them as being nothing more than an extension of his persona and the acts that he was being accused of being consensual acts between two adults. And I don't know if this is going to be a multi-part series or not. We're going to see where we get to during the course of this episode. But to me, Ron Jeremy, particularly his downfall, is very reminiscent of the downfall of Jimmy Savile, which was the first hardcore real deal deep dive that I did on this program, running through 14 episodes. I was even nominated for a few awards for it, although I did not win any of them. But if you listen to that series, hopefully you're going to see parallels between Jeremy and Savile, and even Cyril Smith to some small degree, in that people knew they were undertaking some of these activities. They turned a blind eye because of celebrity status and not wanting to get involved, cause trouble. But also, especially in the case of Ron Jeremy, at least according to multiple women and men who knew him in the pornographic industry, they became so desensitized to this type of behavior, given their nature of work, that it was, to them, completely normal for an individual to act the way that Ron Jeremy was acting. At least, that's what they thought. However, as things started to come out and Jeremy's behavior became more and more apparent in headlines, many of these individuals started to realize that Ron Jeremy was in fact a very aggressive and prolific sexual predator, and that things that their job had conditioned them to think was normal were in fact not normal, and instead acts of severe predation. Ronald Jeremy Hyatt was born to a middle-class Jewish family on March 12, 1953, in Queens, New York. His father, Arnold, was a former physicist who taught at Queens College, Cuny, while his mother worked as a book editor, at least up until the time that Ron, who was the middle of three children, was 8 years old when his mother was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Now, by all accounts, young Ron Jeremy was a very gregarious and outgoing child who always had to be the center of attention. However, according to family members, he was also very family-oriented, helping to take care of his mother as her disease progressed and she became bedridden and unable to do daily things like bathe herself or go to the bathroom. Many people said that Ron was a natural ladies man, having multiple girlfriends throughout his high school years, because he was considered good-looking, outgoing, and very, very funny. Jeremy himself stated that in the back of his mind, he always wanted to be a performer, to be an actor. With this in mind, while he was in high school at Benjamin N. Cardozo High School in Queens, where he attended with former mainstream television star Reginald L. Johnson, known for his performances in Die Hard and Family Matters, Ron Jeremy participated in the drama department, acting in various school plays. After graduating from high school, Jeremy went on to attend Queens College, Cuny, where he majored in both drama and education. Now, eventually, Ron Jeremy is going to end up getting a master's degree in education, something that he would later say was his ace in the hole should his acting career never pan out. We know that Ron Jeremy Hyatt, at this point, worked for a period of time as a teacher with special needs students, although eventually he resigns his position as a teacher and decides to pursue a career in acting. Jeremy said of this period of time that he knew what it was like to starve at this point, as he really wasn't a very good actor, and roles were few and far between. The pay for these roles was very scant. In 1977, Jeremy gets a bit part in a movie called Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses, which is most notable for being the first on-screen appearance of comedy legend Robin Williams, who at this point in time was an unknown comedian who ends up going to court with the producers of the film after he becomes a star through Mork and Mindy, as they re-edited the film and re-released it, giving Robin Williams top billing. Basically, it is a dole sex comedy made up of various sketches that was mostly panned by critics and quickly forgotten about. Now, according to a former girlfriend, at some point in 1978, she took a nude picture of Jeremy, who was fairly well endowed, and sent it to Playgirl magazine, who published this picture. And not long after this, Ronald Jeremy Hyatt is contacted by a producer for pornographic films. Jeremy later stated that he really had to think about this opportunity, as he wanted to be a mainstream movie star slash actor, but after learning that pornography would sustain him financially, and also that producers in the porno industry had ties to mainstream media and thus might be able to get him roles in mainstream media productions, Jeremy decides to go through with this, appearing in his first film called Coed Teasers. This would be the first of over 2,000 appearances within the porn industry. According to Ron Jeremy himself, after making this film, in which he was listed as Ronald Hyatt, something of a scandal occurred in the family, as fans who had seen the film, mostly women, found his grandmother listed in the phone book. His grandmother's name was Rose, and in the phone book she was listed as R. Hyatt. In an interview with the Jewish Journal, Jeremy stated, quote, "She had to move out of her apartment for a month," he confides. "My father told me, if you want to go into this naked, crazy business, so be it, but if you use the family name again, I'll kill you." It's at this point that Ronald Hyatt changes his stage name to Ron Jeremy. In this same interview with the Jewish Journal, Ron Jeremy states that his intention was to hopefully make a few pornographic films before landing roles in larger mainstream movies. Very quickly, Jeremy begins to make a name for himself within the porn industry. He's still living on the East Coast, filming scenes and movies mostly in upstate New York and New Jersey. However, at one point in 1979, Jeremy accepts an offer to appear in a film by the name of Olympic Fever. Now, according to Jeremy, he was expecting, you know, the nice, normal California weather. So he dresses in a t-shirt and shorts, bringing no additional clothing with him, as he wasn't expecting to be there more than a day. However, on the way to the movie location, which was up near Lake Arrowhead in the San Bernardino Mountains, the weather unexpectedly changed to blizzard conditions. Jeremy stated that he was nearly suffering from hypothermia by the time that they arrived at the shooting location. Jeremy was immediately rushed into a shower. Fellow porn star William Marigold stated that when Jeremy exited the shower, because of the extreme changes in temperature, his skin had taken on a purplish hue, and all the hair on his body, of which there was quite a lot, was standing on end. At which point, Marigold is said to have quipped, quote, "You are a hedgehog, my friend, a walking, talking hedgehog." That is one version of that particular story as to where Jeremy got his nickname within the porno industry. Other versions I have heard come from the fact that Jeremy was supposedly able to felicitate himself, and upon seeing this, one individual remarked that he looked like a hedgehog rolling himself into a ball. In any event, Jeremy ends up with this nickname, and it is one that is going to stick with him for the rest of his career. At somewhere around this point in time, Jeremy starts to get something of a reputation as a groper. Many within the industry said that this type of behavior of walking up and physically touching another performer, particularly of the opposite sex, in a sexual manner was, and at times still is, very common and really isn't thought of in a negative way. Just as it wasn't thought of negatively when individuals within the industry, both male and female, would describe Jeremy as a pervert. It was almost as though this is an acceptable moniker for an individual within the pornographic industry to have and to be. Whereas in mainstream media, were Jeremy to do some of the various things that he was known to do, such as grabbing women's asses or inserting a finger inside of them outside of a sex scene, or something that is very, very common for him and can be seen in multiple news clips, groping a woman's breasts or exposing one of their breasts and then putting his mouth on the nipple, he would have faced criminal charges and any form of a career that he might have had would have been over instantaneously. But in the bubble that is the pornographic industry, this type of behavior was largely ignored and seen as commonplace. In the documentary film Porn King, The Rise and Fall of Ron Jeremy, which I highly recommend anybody interested in this particular subject go and seek out, a former actor and director by the name of Adam Glasser, who performed under the name of Seymour Butts, speaks pretty openly about Jeremy, and I have to state that of all the men who were interviewed for this particular documentary, he is the only one that comes off, in my opinion, as an actual human being who is not only able to look back at Jeremy's actions throughout the years with realistic eyes, but also shows empathy for his victims and treats the things that Jeremy is accused of having done with the level of gravitas that is needed. Now, at one point during this documentary, Glasser states that basically on a porn set, there were two things that you could expect. Ron Jeremy to be looking for his next meal and looking for his next sexual conquest. Glasser states pretty emphatically that, you know, in his opinion, it's pretty obvious that Jeremy was a sex addict of the highest order. And this was something that people took notice of fairly early on during Ron Jeremy's career in pornographic films. And I'm gonna share a clip from this film of Glasser talking about the industry so you can get a better idea of not only how things went on sets, but also of the way he views Jeremy.
Yeah, Ron was a groper. If I'm able to bet, is Ron Jeremy going to be groping anybody tonight? I'm laying my money on yes, he's groping. In my movies, he was a groper. He was supposed to be a groper. It's not a secret. And here's the other thing. In that same room that he's groping, there's a lot of other groping going on. Girls groping girls. Guys groping girls. Girls groping guys. So the lines are just so blurred in this industry. But obviously, I'm not talking about sticking my fingers in somebody's pussy or something like that. That's a different story. There's no way Ronnie didn't know the difference. Whether the lines were blurred or not, fingers up the pussy, cocks in asses, in vaginas, there's no blurred lines there. It's wrong.
Obviously, this interview was given after the allegations against Ron Jeremy were made and the charges had been filed. But it does give you something of a bird's eye view of how things were on set and how some within the industry view the things that Ron Jeremy was accused of. Obviously, there are supporters of his who basically state that the women that made these accusations were really just seeking to get their name in print and make money, blah, blah, blah. That type of shit happens a lot with this type of situation where you have someone who has money, is seen as powerful, and they're really willing to turn a blind eye towards the thing that this individual has been accused of, or in some cases convicted of having done. Now, to the best of anyone's knowledge, during this period of time, late 70s, early 1980s, Jeremy was simply a horny individual who had lucked out by getting into the pornographic industry where he could, you know, sleep with beautiful women and use that celebrity status to get further conquests away from the camera. But outside of acts of what we now view as unwanted touching, there really wasn't anything to throw a red flag on yet. Then, as now the pornographic industry was rather a closed world where things of this nature, improprieties, etc., were very rarely, if ever, talked about publicly. There were some within the industry who saw Ron Jeremy's activities and actions for what they were and simply refused to do scenes with Ron Jeremy. But as the decade's gonna wear on and Jeremy's star gets bigger and bigger, many of them would put aside their reservations and revulsions towards Jeremy in order that their name can be associated with them and hopefully they can become a bigger star in the industry. What no one really knew, however, because the young woman did not talk about it for many years, was that allegedly in December of 1983, Ron Jeremy committed his first known act of rape. This occurred in Hawaii, where a actress by the name of Ginger Lynn was making a film with Jeremy and numerous others. Now, according to Lynn, during the making of this film, she began a romantic relationship with one of her co-stars. As she states, one evening, she and this other individual were down on the beach making love when they happened to look up to find Ron Jeremy standing up on either a cliff or a hillside above them. Jeremy then asks whether or not he can participate in what they are doing. The two of them emphatically tell them no, at which point Jeremy leaves and they continue on with their intimate moment. However, later that night, Lynn returns to her hotel room. She goes into the bathroom, walks to the sink, and starts cleaning her face and again, this is according to Ginger Lynn, she feels somebody walk up behind her. When she looks up in the mirror, she discovers Ron Jeremy, who had apparently been hiding behind the bathroom door. She states that before she could react to this, Jeremy overpowers her, pins her hands to the sink, pulls down her bathing suit, and begins to rape her. She stated that she was screaming, trying to fight back against Jeremy, but it was no physical match, and that the louder she got, the more she protested against what he was doing, the harder Jeremy was in his sexual assault, seemingly drawing enjoyment from Ginger Lynn's non-consent to what he was doing. She stated that he basically treated it as though it was a consensual porno scene, pulling her hair, slapping her, that type of thing, until he finally finished and simply walked out of her apartment without having uttered a single word. She states that this actually occurred on her 21st birthday, and that eventually she rationalized this in her own mind as, you know, having been okay because she had placed herself into this situation by being in a pornographic film, and that because of this, in her mind, it wasn't really possible for her to have been raped by one of her co-stars. And Ginger Lynn is not alone with this mentality, this type of mindset. Many women who have come forward in the last decade talking about sexual assault within the adult film industry recount similar stories. I'm not saying specifically with Ron Jeremy, with other individuals, and that their mindset was, while I put myself into this situation, there is nothing I can do about it. Who's going to believe me? It really wasn't an act of rape because of my occupation, etc., etc. Now, according to Ginger Lynn, the following day, producers approached her and told her that she had one more scene to film because of contractual obligations, and that that scene would be with Ron Jeremy. She stated that she informed them that Jeremy was on her no list, meaning other performers that she refuses to work with. However, they informed her that she did in fact have to do this scene. So the day after she was allegedly raped, Ginger Lynn does a sex scene with Ron Jeremy on camera. She stated that during this scene, Jeremy was behind her, and one of his calling cards was a statement that he would make saying, "Just the tip, just the tip." She said Jeremy said this during the course of the filming. She turned around, punched him in the face, and no one on set said a single thing about what had just occurred. They simply continued with shooting the scene. She further states that at a later point in time, a director sets up a meeting between her and Ron Jeremy. She lets this director know what has happened. Jeremy shows up, brings her flowers. She confronts him over this, and Ron Jeremy is supposed to have said, "I thought that's what you wanted to happen." When she does eventually come forward with this story, many people point to the fact that they did subsequent scenes together after this alleged incident occurred, stating that if this had actually happened, why was she still willing to do scenes with Ron Jeremy? She's only saying this to get her name in print and to become rich, etc., etc. The reality of the situation is such that many times a victim will put themselves within the proximity of their abuser for whatever reason, even though this thing has occurred. And this is not limited to just the pornographic industry, but to victims of sexual abuse of any type. That does not mean that the victim is lying in their statements. It only further shows how damaged the action has made them, that in their own mind, they are able to justify being with them. We'll be back in just a moment. You've heard me talk about it before, peeps and freaks. Chinese Mandarin is the number one in-demand language globally in the international job market. And I have a brand new sponsor this week just for you. Chinese teacher Mary. Mary goes deep into learning Mandarin, much the same way I go deep into covering true crime cases, ensuring that every single student not only understands pronunciation and sentence structure, but that they can differentiate between tones, read the language, and speak it fluently. I have never come across another Chinese teacher quite like Mary, because while she likes to have fun, and believe me, Mary is absolutely hilarious, she takes the job of teaching foreigners Chinese extremely seriously. So what I want you to do right now is go to tinyurl.com/ChineseTeacherMary, follow her, subscribe to her, come to her class, which is held 3 times a day. Support her and learn from her. Because I can almost guarantee you that after one lesson with Mary, you're going to realize that there is not a single teacher out there who is as dedicated to teaching as she is. Again, that's tinyurl.com/ChineseTeacherMary. Or just look for the link in the description. Hey there, D&Ders. Your friend Ian here with another brand new sponsor this week. Artwork by Katie. Now, as the son of a fairly successful artist, I grew up around the art world, saw many different styles of art. I know good art from bad, and I can honestly say that in addition to being a good friend, Katie is one of the best artists I have ever had the pleasure of seeing. Her works of art, be it drawings or paintings, are absolutely amazing. And Katie doesn't just do original works of art, she also does commission pieces. So if you're looking for that perfect piece of art to offset the decor in your home, office, or even in your place of business, go check out Artwork by Katie at linktr.ee/KatieArtworks. That's linktr.ee/KatieArtworks. You'll be blown away. After this alleged incident took place, Ron Jeremy continues on with his career, appearing in very small, often uncredited roles in various mainstream films, such as a crowd shot at the end of the movie Ghostbusters, as his star in the adult film industry continues to rise. Now, as of this recording, during this period, the rest of the 1980s, there are no recorded incidents similar to what Ginger Lynn experienced in concerns with Ron Jeremy, but that does not mean no further incidents occurred during this period of time, just that victims have not come forward. And I'm going to throw this out there. If you were in the adult industry and had interactions with Ron Jeremy and were a victim of his and would like to tell your story, please contact me at the show. It's a safe place. I have interviewed other victims of sexual assaults in the past. I do not pay for interviews, but I am willing to listen and to believe what it is that you have to say to get your story out there to the world, and also to help fill in the blanks in the Ron Jeremy saga as far as things that he did that just have never made the light of day. Who knows, there may be other stories from this period of time, the remainder of the 80s, that are known throughout the industry that have just never come forward, because as the 80s progressed and Ron Jeremy's star continued to rise, it's not outside the realm of possibility that the most powerful people within the industry would want to protect the name of the man who was quickly becoming the face of their industry. That is exactly what Ron Jeremy is going to end up becoming. He's going to become the face of the pornographic industry, who starts to get some form of mainstream appeal as his body begins to deteriorate. He starts putting on weight, losing his hair, and looking less and less like he did at the start of it, and more like a well-hung, physically unappealing mound of dough. Many women performers have come forward stating that Ron Jeremy's behavior, whether it was the sexual assaults or just his various groping activities, were kind of a well-kept secret inside of the industry, and that they would warn younger performers away from working with Ron Jeremy as the years progressed and his behavior becomes more erratic. There are a lot of stories out there of Ron Jeremy simply whipping his penis out in front of people without any sort of encouragement, also of him doing this and of women just latching on to it, and those present really just laughing it off. Some point Jeremy gets into directing films, which gives him more power and more access to women, where it's possible, and again this is just my opinion, he used that position of power and authority to, you know, get these women to sleep with him, i.e. the proverbial Hollywood casting couch. Did this ever occur? I don't know. I cannot say for certain, but it is within the realm of possibility. As the 80s turn into the 90s, and Jeremy continues to be the face of porn, his fees go up, he starts to become a fairly wealthy man, and as he accumulates this wealth, his physical appearance continues to deteriorate. Women within the industry begin to complain about him to one another. His hygiene routines, things of that nature, start to call him a fat, dirty, smelly, old pervert. And a lot of women within the industry refuse to work with him unless there are provisions such as he cut his fingernails, he shower before scenes, he uses deodorant, etc., etc. Ginger Lynn herself would eventually act in a scene with Ron Jeremy, and in describing the scene, she said she was looking for closure. Instead, she got, quote-unquote, shit-faced drunk and doesn't remember any of it. Many individuals, both within the pornographic film industry and outside of it, has used this as a way to try and discredit her. But even some within the industry have stated that just because she acted in a scene with him does not discount what had happened between them in the past. many have stated that Ron had an 8x10 photograph of Ginger from their time in Hawaii, and that he would show it to pretty much anybody in an effort to defend himself against the allegations that she made, basically in a, you know, how could that be possible? Look at the way she is looking at me in this photograph. You know, what happened between us was not an act of rape. Something, again, that is very common among predators when they have been accused of having committed an act. As the 90s progress, Ron Jeremy is still acting in porn. He's getting a lot more mainstream roles and mainstream recognition, appearing in films, television shows, and music videos. Inside the industry, many women are still leery of him. A number of them are refusing to work with him. This does not deter Ron Jeremy in any fashion, however. He continues on living off of, you know, his name, value, brand recognition, however you want to look at it, and there are no further acts of rape until October of 2000. A British pornographic star by the name of Lillian Young states that she first met Jeremy in 2000 at the Rainbow Room, which is a very famous bar in West Hollywood. Upon first meeting him, Jeremy was very cordial and welcoming her not only to the industry, but also to the United States of America. Now, Lillian states that on October 31st of 2000, she was at a charity event being thrown by the adult film industry at the House of Blues. She was there with numerous other performers, many of whom she considered her friends. They were sitting at a table drinking with fellow performer Alana Evans and Evans's former husband. Both women have stated that they were not in performer mode, they're just at the table, when suddenly Ron Jeremy walks up behind Lillian, shoves her over the table, pulls his penis out, and places it inside of her. Lillian says she pushes her way upright and around, sees it's Jeremy, and slaps him across the face as hard as she can. Jeremy apparently is unaffected by this and simply walks off into the crowd with his penis still out of his trousers. When Lillian eventually is telling people about this, she learns that that is, quote-unquote, just Ron. He thinks he just has free access and a free pass. It's nothing to worry about. Reality is that he had just raped her. Lana Evans, who is still friends with Lillian, stated in interviews that, it, no, they were so desensitized to this type of thing by this point that it didn't even occur to them that Ron Jeremy had just committed an act of rape in a crowded music venue in full view of everyone. She further states that the mindset among many within the industry was that if they had gone to the police with this information, they didn't think the police would believe them and would said simply laugh at them as they were sex workers, and again, this is a quote, sex workers can't be raped. And despite this, it's at this point that Ron Jeremy really starts to transcend the porno industry. His name is really well known outside of the porn bubble. He's starting to be seen as something of a cultural icon within mainstream American society, being interviewed in various publications about his life, having a documentary about him made called Porn Star, The Legend of Ron Jeremy. All while these types of stories about Ron Jeremy are swirling around in the industry, and more women are refusing to work with him. Alana Evans recounts a story of Ron inviting her to accompany him to a red carpet event. And while they're on the red carpet, in front of everyone, she suddenly feels a finger inside of herself and is shocked to discover that it is Ron Jeremy. Another young woman, a online sex worker who is eventually going to lead towards the downfall of Ron Jeremy, recounts encountering him on the red carpet at an event, asking for an interview, Jeremy getting her alone into a stairwell, at which point he begins to sexually assault her, and she is able to escape. So this stuff is all going on. Some of these allegations are making their way into the media. Ron Jeremy continues on unaffected, denying all of these allegations, telling, you know, his side of the story, that, you know, anything that has happened is consensual, he's not that way, he's not a danger, he's not a sexual predator, etc., etc. Many who knew him, both friend and foe, all stated that as the early 2000s began to wear on, they noticed a stark change in Ron Jeremy, in not only his demeanor, but also in the way he presented himself. Don was the, you know, jovial, joking, fun-loving individual, to be replaced with someone who was not showering, wearing the same clothing, constantly just a complete physical wreck. In conjunction with this, he was known to have gotten to the point with his apartment and his hoarding that he actually moved across the street into a hotel because he simply could not live inside of the condo any longer. And all of this is indicative of a slip in Ron Jeremy's mental faculties, something that we're going to get into later on in this episode. A lot of people that knew Ron during this point in his life have come forward to try and defend him, stating that Ron Jeremy didn't have to commit acts of rape in order to get women, recounting tales of having gone out with Ron, and he would simply step away for a moment behind a dumpster or into a bathroom with a young woman who was willing to give her body to him. In my opinion, that does not discount any of these women who have come forward to state that Ron Jeremy sexually assaulted them. There are plenty of other predators throughout history. Individuals like Ted Bundy, Rodney Alcala, ad infinitum, who were able to get willing sexual partners who still went out and committed acts of sexual depravity. Now, I'm not saying that Ron Jeremy is guilty of any of these various crimes. However, my opinion is that more likely than not, he is, given the information that we have available to us. All of that aside, this point in time is the most prolific in terms of Ron Jeremy's mainstream appeal. He befriends an individual by the name of Craig Gross, who runs a religious organization pretty much that is against pornography. The two of them do a nationwide tour where they debate one another on the legitimacy, morality, etc., etc., of pornography. He's also starring on reality television shows, that kind of thing. My personal opinion, again, the wide acceptance of an individual such as Ron Jeremy really shows the decay and collapse of morals in Western society. I see nothing wrong with pornography personally. However, the flip side of that is let's look at what it really is. It's prostitution. Pornography actually comes from the French words for filmed prostitution, which is really what they are. And I personally believe that it is insane that we embrace and hold individuals such as Ron Jeremy up on a pedestal. Many of these individuals, I am certain, are good people. That does not mean we need to, you know, put them on a stamp or glorify their activities. Ron's personal assistant, who was with him 6 to 7 days a week, has gone on the record stating that the Ron Jeremy he knew never really thought about any consequences for his actions. He simply went ahead and did things. Eventually, in 2017, police in both Washington State and California start looking into all of these various allegations that are floating around against Ron Jeremy. And more begin coming to light, specifically allegations of things that took place at the Rainbow Room in California. Ron Jeremy flatly denies any of these allegations, saying that they're all old allegations, he has not done any of these things, but you don't have to take my word for it. We're going to listen to an interview that Jeremy did around this point in time, 2017-2018.
How do you respond to all the charges against the woman suing you?
I can sue that guy for life in round pants. You know, in this country, you can sue for anything.
Yeah.
It was dropped by the DA.
Yeah. That says it all right there.
And what do you do, man? You could sue for a bad fashion statement.
Yeah.
Those pants don't match that shirt. You know, unfortunately, that's how it is, but the DA knocked it down, so it doesn't exist anymore. In America, anybody can sue for anything. That's the greatness of America, and also the confusion of America.
In 2018, prosecutors in both states decide not to move forward with any criminal charges against Ron Jeremy. However, that's not the end of our story. And it's at this point that many individuals began to notice an extreme change in Ron Jeremy, as he was prone to simply losing place in conversation, falling asleep mid-sentence and continuing the conversation, and longtime friends and acquaintances stated that Jeremy had no recollection of who they were and would have to be explicitly told by them who they were in order for Jeremy to remember them. This is indicative of severe decline in his mental capacities. And this ties in with the allegations that are about to be leveled against Ron Jeremy, particularly his actions at the Rainbow Room. As it appears that while Ron Jeremy's mental capacity slowly began to fade, his inhibitions, anything that kept him from performing these various things that he has been accused of in a more public setting, that predator's instinct of knowing where to strike and when began to vanish. And Jeremy began to commit more and more assaults, really openly. There are stories out there of Ron Jeremy committing acts of forced oral copulation, both performing it as well as receiving it at the Rainbow Room, of various forms of physical molestation, as well as numerous accounts of rape, all having taken place at the Rainbow Room. One of the individuals who's going to eventually come forward to authorities is a real estate agent by the name of Charity Carson Hawk, who stated that when she met Ron Jeremy, well over 20 years ago, she had no idea who he was. She's a very religious individual. She said they had immediate friendship. There was no form of judgment on her part towards Jeremy, nor was there any form of physical attraction between either of them. She almost began to look at Jeremy as, you know, a family member. She stated the last time that she saw Ron, she went to hang out with him. He was staying at the hotel across the street from his condo, He explained that he was living there because the condo was a shambles due to his hoarding. She states that it was a normal interaction with Ron. At some point during the evening, he said, "Hey, follow me, I want to show you something." They end up in a bathroom, at which point Ron Jeremy slams the door, and in her own words, quote unquote, "she saw the devil in disguise," unquote. This point, Jeremy begins to attempt sexually assaulting her, slamming Charity against the wall, groping at her breasts. She is fighting back against him as he's attempting to place her hands on his penis, remove her clothing. Charity is eventually able to fight off Ron and runs from the bathroom, at which point Charity goes to the LAPD and files a complaint against Ronald Jeremy Hyatt. In June of 2020, Ron Jeremy is charged with 4 counts of rape and sexual assault by the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. These include a 25-year-old woman who stated that Jeremy had raped her at a West Hollywood home in May of 2014, sexual assault of 2 women ages 33 and 46 on separate occasions at a bar in West Hollywood in 2017, and raping a woman at this same bar in July of 2019. With the release of this indictment, Ron Jeremy's public persona begins to fade. His talent agency drops him as a client. On June 27th, Jeremy pleads not guilty. The district attorney's office then comes forward and states that they have 25 additional charges against Ron Jeremy. At this point, 6 women from the adult film industry come forward stating that Ron Jeremy has raped or sexually assaulted them. And all of them are going to end up in a grand jury hearing, and it's at this point that Ron Jeremy is officially charged and held for all of these crimes. In August of 2020, 20 further charges are filed against Ron Jeremy that include rape, sexual assault, sodomy, and forcible penetration by foreign objects. These charges involved 12 different women with the age range between 15 to 54 years old, and all of the allegations having taken place between 2004 and 2020. The most recent allegation against Jeremy is said to have occurred on January 1st, 2020, when a 21-year-old woman said that Ron Jeremy had sexually assaulted her outside of a business in Hollywood. 6 further women come forward stating that Jeremy sexually assaulted them at the Rainbow Bar, with another woman stating that Jeremy had sexually assaulted her in the bar's parking lot. Jeremy is held on a $6.6 million bail. Ron Jeremy is going to end up being charged with 34 sexual assaults involving 21 different women. So Jeremy is held in police custody at the Twin Towers Correctional Facility. In March of 2022, the judge orders Ron Jeremy's pending trial suspended while he goes under a court-mandated mental health examination. This is because many individuals on both sides of the prosecution and defense stated that Jeremy had become incoherent, and it was obvious to everyone that he simply was not there in terms of his mental capacity. On January 17th of 2023, Ron Jeremy is found by the judge to be mentally unfit to stand trial due to, quote, incurable neurocognitive decline. On February 8th of 2023, Ron Jeremy is transferred to a state mental health hospital with a progress report hearing scheduled for May 8th of 2023. Jeremy can be committed to this hospital for up to 2 years while he undergoes all of these evaluations. On November 17th, 2023, the judge grants the defense's request to have Jeremy released from this mental health facility to a private residence where he will receive care and where he currently resides. Now, on August 21st of 2023, a lawsuit was filed against the Rainbow Bar and Grill, where it was alleged that employees knew what Ron Jeremy was doing there, that he was sexually assaulting women and had allowed him to do so. On April 15th of 2025, the Rainbow Bar and Grill reached a global settlement with 9 accusers, meaning they will receive financial compensation for the things that they alleged had taken place inside of the Rainbow Bar and Grill. As of this recording, Jeremy continues to reside in a private residence where he is attended to round the clock by family members and a nurse. Obviously, Ron Jeremy is at the end of the line, or very close to it, with his legacy and image forever being tarnished. Now, whether or not you believe any of these accusations against Ron Jeremy is entirely up to the individual listening. However, my personal opinion is that he is in fact guilty of many, if not all, of these crimes, and that there are others that we simply don't know about, which may come out in the months and years ahead, especially if Jeremy passes away and women feel safe to come forward with their stories. In any event, I hope that you have enjoyed this week's case. Until next time, stay morbid.